Matt Kibbe here, host of Kibbe on Liberty. We are at the New Hampshire Liberty Forum, hosted by my friends at the Free State Project. We're going to talk a little bit about politics. We're going to talk about social change. We're going to talk about policy and this beautiful community that is rising up in the Granite State, defending and fighting for liberty. Check it out.
Derek, how's it going?
It's going great.
We are at the New Hampshire Liberty Forum, and you gave a presentation yesterday about Defend the Guard, mm-hmm. and you're very involved in that, and I want to get your bona fides on that. But it dawned on me that, one, this is an important, innovative, essential way to rein in the war state in Washington, D.C., and maybe nobody even knows about it yet. Like, I think there's, and Tulsi Gabbard said this morning when someone asked her about Defend the Guard, she's like, she's a veteran and you're a veteran, but maybe even veterans or members of the National Guard don't even know what this cause is yet. So it made sense to do a show and
yes,
learn about Defend the Guard. How did you get involved in this issue?
So when I was in the New Hampshire Army National Guard, just during the pandemic, and you know, National Guard handled a lot of COVID response, so I kind of got a very good view of how government was operating during that time period.
Were you deployed to keep people from leaving their homes?
No.
Okay.
Yeah. In New Hampshire, the National Guard operated all the vaccine sites and the testing sites, and did a lot of like the distribution centers, trying to make sure people had enough, you know, PPE or whatever. So we were operating the vaccine centers in Plymouth, New Hampshire, and then Laconia, New Hampshire.
So a naive question, did that feel outside of your mission? Is that something you would have signed up for? I guess the National Guard would do disaster relief type efforts, and then sometimes they're deployed to go help out with hurricanes and stuff like that. So maybe not, but
right.
It seems weird to me.
Well, we actually got asked that question a lot by people coming to get vaccines. And I always said, like, yes, this is exactly what I signed up for, was to protect people in New Hampshire. Whether or not I agreed it was actually protection, but I thought it was a legitimate mission for what the National Guard would be used for, compared to some other illegitimate missions that we've been given over the last 2 decades.
And you're still a member of the National Guard?
I am not. Okay. We got out in 2022.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how did you find out about Defend the Guard?
Yeah. So, you know, just seeing how everything operated in my eyes in the wrong way during the whole COVID response, thought, you know, my personal philosophy is I don't have a right to complain about anything unless I'm willing to do something about it. So I decided to get involved in politics and government. That's how I became familiar with the Free State Project. I was at Porkfest in 2021, I believe, and that's where I met Diego Rivera, who's our national field director for Bring Our Troops Home. And he was there with at the time he was a state representative from Idaho, but now he's a state senator, Ben Adams, and then Eric Brakey was there too. And the four of us, we kind of did a panel on Defend the Guard, and I kept in touch with Diego after that, and he asked me to kind of run things up here in New Hampshire, because it wasn't really going great at the time that Diego asked me to start taking over here.
So before we get into what's going on, not just in New Hampshire, but some of these states you've already mentioned, tell us what is Defend the Guard and why is it important?
Sure. Yeah. Defend the Guard, simply put, would prevent the state's National Guard, whether Air Force or Army, from being deployed to overseas combat, you know, very emphasized it's just combat, without a congressional declaration of war, which hasn't happened in 82 years since 1942.
And why does that matter? I know Tulsi Gabbard said that she thought it was a good check on congressional abdication of their constitutional responsibility mm-hmm. to insist that war is declared from Congress, from the House closest to the people, that doesn't happen anymore. Is that why it matters?
Yeah, that's definitely one of the reasons. You know, our founders all, you know, there's plenty of quotes out there from our founding fathers. They created the Constitution the way that they did, and war powers in the way that they did, knowing that the executive being closest to war, right, the executive commander in chief being closest to war is most prone to it. So they put the power to declare war in Congress, you know, which is, you know, the people, elected by the people. And that way, if the people weren't supportive of any conflict, that they could vote out and, you know, end the war if they needed to. We haven't done that in a very long time, and you can kind of see the consequences of that. Really, the wars have made us both financially and morally bankrupt, right? You know, you can look at the way that, you know, Vietnam was handled. Not great. That was not a declared war. And the wars in the Middle East, right? You know, the whole lie, WMDs in Iraq. And this, it is not a great look for the United States. You know, why should anyone take it seriously because of, you know, the way that we've responded to our foreign relations overseas? Scott Wharton, I remember he had a talk, you know, and we talked all the time about how the Middle East, people in the Middle East treat women. And he had a response, which was, what right do we have to tell them how to treat their women when we're just going to drop a Hellfire missile on our car anyways? That's really what we've done. When I was in the National Guard, I read about Airman Daniel Hale, who was the whistleblower from the drone papers. You know, blew the whistle that during the Obama years, 90% of drone strikes were civilians. I was artillery in the National Guard. That kind of bothered me. I'm not seeing people shoot back at me. I'm just giving orders to just shoot, you know, whatever that target might be. And to read that 90% of drone pilots were not hitting the right target, you know, really kind of makes you question what's going on.
The very idea of this, and there are we'll talk about the scaremongers who think this is the scaremongers who love permanent wars. Scaremongers, part of the military-industrial complex, have all sorts of catastrophic stories about why Defend the Guard is a bad idea. But the logic of it, that people would actually, the voters, the democracy that supposedly everybody believes in, that they would actually have a voice in whether or not their sons and daughters get put in harm's way. How would you say no to that? Because that is the American system, or at least that's what we're told.
Right. That's what all the founders said. It's, you know, we have the rules. We're supposed to be a country of law, which is the Constitution, lays out how it's supposed to be done. A lot of the opposition to Defend the Guard, they like to say that, well, if you do this, then they'll just pull funding away from your National Guard units because they're not deployed overseas.
The threat is to pull the plug on all of the largesse that comes from the military-industrial complex.
Right. Yeah. Which, you know, would be political suicide for anyone in Congress to vote on an appropriations measure that cuts funding to a state's National Guard unit. But also, you know, it's not that we're not going to send National Guard through this legislation. Just we need to make sure that's done the right way.
Yeah.
Free the People is embarking on our most ambitious project to date to document and expose the lies behind the greatest public health failure in my lifetime. We're talking to insiders with firsthand knowledge of the government's role in funding, creating, and then covering up the COVID-19 virus in our exclusive new documentary series, The Cover-Up. But I need your help. We won't get to the bottom of this scandal alone, so I'm asking viewers to crowdsource any information that could be helpful to our investigation. If you're watching this, you already know what the government did during lockdowns was unforgivable. Help us get to the truth and prevent it from ever happening again. To get involved, go to freethepeople.org/coverup. That's freethepeople.org/coverup. The truth is out there.
So let's go through the, this is a, I don't know, I think this is a fairly new movement, but maybe I just don't know the history, but where does it start? Does it start in Arizona or Idaho? I don't remember.
So the first state to introduce this bill was West Virginia. Representative Pat McGeehan, who was an Air Force combat veteran, he was the first person to introduce this bill. He kind of crafted it with the 10th Amendment Center. But this is a really new move.
What year was that?
I think it was 2014, I believe.
Okay.
2013, 2014.
So pretty new.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then our founder of Bring Our Troops Home, Dan McKnight, he founded the organization to go lobby Congress originally. And when he went to Congress, he basically got laughed at by every single senator and congressman. Liz Cheney told him that we're never bringing troops out of Afghanistan. So he was kind of at a loss on how he's supposed to solve this problem. He was, active duty Marine, multiple tours in Iraq and Afghanistan, active duty Army, Idaho Army National Guard. So, he saw all sides of it. So he met Pat McGeehan, and they worked together with the 10th Amendment Center to turn Bring Our Troops Home instead of focus on the federal government and how we can solve this overseas intervention federally, how to do that at the state level instead, kind of pressure Congress through the system of federalism that our founders gave us.
So you said something as a bit of an aside, because I want to get back to the legislative strategy, but there's a lot of veterans involved in Defend the Guard. And I remember going all the way back to 2008, so many veterans were supporting Ron Paul, and it sort of countered the official narrative that, Ron Paul was anti-troops. Ron Paul was against people that served their country. But of course, the opposite is actually true, because they have seen what's really going on in combat. They have seen sort of the pointlessness and perhaps the counterproductive nature of the endless war in Afghanistan, for instance. So it makes a lot of sense to me. But it's important to point out this is a veteran, people with skin in the game want to fix this problem so that we don't needlessly create more veterans who either die or lives are ruined by that.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. This isn't a movement of, hippies or anything like that. This is a lot of veterans coming together to finally solve the problem that we've had for over 20 years now. And, it's definitely a lot of, post 9/11 veterans, so the ones who have lived through it, but, we've had other veterans all across the board come support us, left, right, center, all around. It's actually been a pretty powerful movement, more powerful than any other movement that I've seen in a long time. I think it really does carry a lot of that momentum from the Ron Paul stuff.
So the first draft legislation drops in West Virginia. Where does it go from there? I assume it doesn't pass in West Virginia.
Right.
What happens next?
So for the last, since Pat McGeehan originally introduced it, since Bring Our Troops Home became an organization under Dan McKnight, and then Diego Rivera, who was a Young Americans for Liberty veteran, so, he was a military veteran, but he also worked for Young Americans for Liberty, so he had a lot of that grassroots experience. Them two, along with Hunter Durensis, who's their comms guy. So the three of them kind of come together. They lay out a strategy. They want to become a 50-state operation, right? And part of that process is finding volunteers, because it is really just three guys kind of working on this thing. Finding volunteers that want to, be champions, working within state houses all across the country, finding bill champions, Right now, well, a couple of years ago, you know, no state had passed it in any chamber. A couple of years ago, 2 years ago, we were in 30 states. This year, we're a 50-state operation introduced in 38 states. So, you know, we've made a pretty significant push in, you know, a little over 5 years.
Is it Arizona where it passed the state Senate? Is that right?
Yeah. So it's passed the state Senate in Arizona and in Idaho and the state House in New Hampshire. And in Arizona, every single Republican state senator sponsored the bill. Not just voted for it, but sponsored it.
So talk about the New Hampshire fight, because this is where you're intimately involved. And this just happened, right? It passed fairly recently.
Yeah, in January.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it was by one vote?
Five votes.
Yep. Yeah.
Five votes, but not a partisan split. It was 187 to 182, with 22 Democrats voting for it and 26 Republicans voting against it. So
how do you lose Republicans? I know they bring in the generals, right?
Yes. Yeah. The Pentagon does send people, like in Arizona, they took some of those state senators out and out on the Black Hawk helicopters and showed them how nice the equipment was and saying, oh, well, we need these overseas. You know, we shouldn't be, you know, questioning what's going on. We should kind of just roll with the status quo. So the Pentagon does send people to intimidate, well, in my eyes, intimidation of the legislature. In New Hampshire, they didn't send a uniformed general, but they sent the deputy adjutant general. So the National Guard, it was the head of the National Guard is called the adjutant general. So they sent the deputy tag to testify against it.
The another aside, it's always pissed me off that government interests can lobby against anything
yeah.
that would rein in the power and money of said government interests. But that's a thing.
Right.
Apparently that's a thing. And you talked about this in your talk. This is a David versus Goliath thing. The military-industrial complex is a multi-trillion-dollar operation. Like, it's huge. And yours is a bottom-up, grassroots, bootstrap. We're going to raise $1,000 to run an internet ad kind of operation.
Yep.
Why would they be afraid of you guys?
I think they're afraid because they know that this is our out. This is how we end their whole... basically, right, the whole foreign intervention money laundering scheme with the military and
the cash cow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the way we're doing it is, you know, the National Guard is about half of the manpower of what the United States has to project. And we're going to say, no, you can't play with that half of the manpower unless you do it the right way, which they wouldn't do because then they have to be accountable for their actions.
Yeah, they'd have to be accountable. It's one of the wicked truths of war is that the people that start the wars are never the people that pay the price
right.
for the wars. And you know, they don't, like, if we could just pick on Liz Cheney for just a second here, she will never bear a personal cost in terms of the body count of war.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I assume you love her, right? She's awesome.
Yeah, she's the best.
She's the best, yeah. I'm so sad she's not in Congress anymore. So going back to Tulsi's comment, and I think, and she's not picking on Defend the Guard in particular, I don't suspect, because I, you know, my experience doing politics and public policy and general education on issues is that most people don't know about most things because they're very busy raising their families, living their lives, working, and doing what people should in America should be free to do. So they naturally don't know what's going on with Defend the Guard. And they might have also said, you know what, every time we send an ostensibly limited government anti-war candidate in my lifetime, Obama was anti-war until he got there. Bush was actually more of a realist than a neocon until he got there. And it goes on and on and on. Like, no matter who we send to Washington, somehow the military-industrial blob just gets them. So maybe they're just like, I can't do anything. So the question is, how do we turn more people on to the doability of this project?
Right. Well, I think right there is why we have so many passionate, motivated people working on the Defend the Guard project, is because, yeah, you're right, for the last two decades, it has been bang your head against the wall, like try, everything fails. The last attempt to repeal the 2001 EUMF got 10 votes in the Senate. You know, it's not happening. And this is a real opportunity to right the wrongs of the past and start doing things the right way. And it's realistic. You know, we can see the military-industrial complex, the Department of Defense. They're flailing their arms around, trying to, you know, figure out how to stop it, and they really can't. You know, the state legislature, you know, being more accountable to the people than Congress, especially in a state like New Hampshire, where you only got to convince, like, you know, each state rep only represents about like 3,200 people, right? You only got to convince, you know, a little more than 1,000 people to vote for you. So it's, you know, really easy to keep the state legislatures on task and not get pulled away from the military-industrial complex and their big money. And that's, you know, really inspired people. This is how we're going to do it. And, you know, when we passed it in the House, we actually got a clip from Fox and Friends. Pete Hegseth, he picked it up and he ran on Fox and Friends, and which is great to get the word out. You know, I'd love to get the word out to everyone. I think it is going to start becoming like an election issue that people run on. That will be deciding factor for voters in a lot of different races. In our governor's race in New Hampshire, Chuck Morse, you know, he's the only one so far to endorse Defend the Guard. If he were to win, you know, to become governor, you would definitely sign it if it ever went to his desk. Hopefully it gets passed before that. You know, hopefully it gets passed this year. But, you know, he's endorsed it. And he's been a great supporter, too. He was the longest-serving Senate president in New Hampshire, so he's got a lot of friends who are still in the Senate, so he's been really, really helpful for bringing our troops home and the Defend the Guard project, which has been really cool.
Does New Hampshire go first?
That's what we're hoping for. The race is on. So Arizona, Idaho, and New Hampshire, we all got one more chamber to pass it in. Idaho's House vote is looking like it's going to be next week. We haven't had a schedule for New Hampshire or for Arizona yet when those are going to be up for a vote, but the race is on for sure.
At Kibbe on Liberty, freedom is a lifestyle 24/7, something you live and breathe and wear every day. If that describes you, you need the very best Liberty swag in the market today, just like this shirt I happen to be wearing. Go to freethepeople.org/KOL and check out our exciting merch. You too can love liberty and look cool.
It's like the one thing that's interesting, and I've been talking to various free staters, the one thing that's interesting about the New Hampshire model is like they can censor us on social media, they can deplatform our candidates, they can do all sorts of things. But it's actually quite difficult to stop a genuine grassroots movement,
right,
without showing your cards that you're actually anti-democracy, you're anti-people, you're anti-veteran. So it's a more robust model than other things that we're trying to do right now. And the other thing that's interesting is that the idea of developing an idea and drafting model legislation and finding co-sponsors and getting a recorded House vote and building a grassroots constituency and lobbying at the local level face-to-face at the coffee shop, your legislator. This is something that the left has done quite well over the years. And once crazy ideas that might come out of Burlington, Vermont, suddenly become model legislation that's running across legislatures all over the country. So purposefully or not, you're sort of stealing a book from their strategy. And
yeah,
and you know, 5 years from now, we might have 20 states doing this.
Right.
Yeah. But that wasn't a question.
Okay.
I often don't ask questions. I'm just babbling on.
Yeah. The grassroots for this movement is really incredible. You know, you can ask anyone who's tried running like any sort of campaign, trying to find not paid door knockers, but just volunteers to door knock or to make phone calls is something that's incredibly difficult to do. You know, you got to spend time, you know, really cultivating relationship and finding different ways to motivate, incentivize people to do these things. But with something like Defend the Guard, where it's kind of like, you know, we've finally found a way to beat back the war machine. People are so happy to volunteer their time. You know, I can get people to canvas, a district, you know, within a few hours, just make a few phone calls. People drop everything to help out with a project like this. And lots of people, Republicans, Libertarians, Democrats, you know, progressives, all across the board. It's been really cool watching it happen. And with phone banks, you know, we've got a phone bank program for Defend the Guard. You know, you got a break, smoke break, lunch break, or something throughout the work day. Make a few phone calls to some legislator telling them to support this bill. You know, in a single day, we've got, you know, well over 50 people making repeated calls over and over again. The politicians really hear that kind of stuff. You know, the tweets are really like, you know, just, you know, kind of retweeting, whatever, that doesn't really reach their ears. It's the real grassroots work, you know, the phone calls and the door knocking, showing up to committee hearings. That's what really sends the message. And, you know, unfortunately for us, the people who will always show up because they're paid to show up are, you know, the bureaucrats, those, you know, government lobbyists. They're paid to be there. So we've got to bring it and find it in ourselves to be the ones to show up every single time, because they will.
I met a bunch of those guys at your session, a very passionate set of activists there. And why don't you wrap up by telling people how can they get involved? How can they get educated? How can they get involved? And where should they go?
Yeah. You know, we're social media, you know, Twitter, Facebook. Just look up either Bring Your Troops Home or Defend the Guard. You know, we're out there. We're the first thing that you can search. We're big enough that we're at the top of the list when you search something like that. BringOurTroopsHome.us or DefendTheGuard.us. They'll bring it to our main homepage on DefendTheGuard.us. It shows a map of the United States. And you can just click on whatever state that you're in. It'll show you all the bill sponsors, bill champions. It'll have a petition to, you know, either help out with the movement or at least just sign up so you can start getting newsletters or communicate with whoever is running that state.
And you're also separate job. You are a grassroots organizer for Americans for Prosperity here in New Hampshire.
Correct. Yeah. I do work for AFP New Hampshire. Not working on Defend the Guard. That's my own time and dime. But yeah, my full-time job is Americans for Prosperity.
Okay, very cool. Thank you for doing this.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for watching. If you liked the conversation, make sure to like the video, subscribe, and also ring the bell for notifications. And if you want to know more about Free the People, go to freethepeople.org.